From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is The Local Edition, and I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, early voting for New York's primary election is underway. Primary day itself is next Tuesday, and this week on The Local Edition, we've got candidate interviews for key local primaries. And we start tonight with State Senator Peter Oberacker, who is seeking the Republican nomination for New York's 19th congressional district, likely to be one of the most competitive congressional races in the entire country this year. We've got that interview coming up. Plus, we get all the details on possible next steps for the former site of the Skinner's Falls Bridge near Milanville, PA. PennDOT's holding a public meeting on Wednesday. We'll be checking in with them in the second half of the program. And now on Radio Catskill, it's Election 2026, with a focus on candidates running in New York State's primary election. Tonight, we have the first of two interviews with the candidates running for the Republican nomination for New York's 19th congressional district. We'll be talking to State Senator Peter Oberacker, who currently represents New York's 51st Senate District. Oberacker's running for Congress with a focus on rural communities, agriculture, affordability, broadband access, and health care. He recently spoke with Radio Catskill's Patricio Rubio.
So for listeners who maybe just getting to know you, explain a little bit, you know, exactly who you are and why you decided to run for Congress in the New York 19.
Sure. You know, the first, I always like to start off with a statement that they say the two things you should never see being made, laws and sausage. Well, I do know both. My dad was a German sausage maker who immigrated here to the U.S. in the 50s, grew up in a family business that we made, of course, sausages and other food products. My mother was a local elected official for over 30 years. And the two interesting things that I learned from both of them, first from my father, was a strong work ethic. You know, the job doesn't end when the clock says it does. And then from my mother, really listening to people to learn and not always to respond. So those were two very key points, I think, in my evolving, if you will, you know, into a state legislator. Coming up through the ranks, I was a former board member, former county or former town supervisor for the town of Maryland, former county legislator for Otsego County, and of course, a New York State senator. So it almost, you know, it's interesting. I understand and I could really see what decisions that were made, if you will, at the higher levels and the impact that it had on local municipalities and local legislators. So I felt as though it's time for me to bring that view, right, to be able to bring that experience to Washington. And I'm going to leave you with this. I have five very good reasons on why I'm running, and those are my grandchildren.
That's awesome. Always good reasons there for the grandchildren.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you know, I've heard you talk many times and you know, you talk a lot about rural New York. And since you are, you know, going to Congress or want to go to Congress, what do you think Washington misunderstands about communities like the ones in New York 19?
You know, I break it down to what I call country sense, not common sense, because common sense isn't so common anymore. And it's interesting that when my 51st Senate district, second largest Senate district in New York, and I even talked to some of my colleagues from downstate, and they're complaining that they have one or two towns that they have to, you know, travel to. And I said, I have seven counties. And the look on their face is almost as if to say, really, it's that large. So there seems to be a disconnect. And what I hope to be able to bring and truly educate Washington is, you know, the fact that I travel 18 miles one way to get groceries. I don't have the opportunity to walk down the street and maybe get a takeout meal, if you know what I'm saying. I have, you know, to health care, right? Another big issue here in the ruralness of the 51st Senate District. Our options are limited. So really what I want to do is to be able to bring that back to Washington and educate them on those challenges. And that may help when they make those decisions that impact us so strongly. So I look at myself not only as an educator, as a legislator, but hopefully as an educator as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the big things in New York 19 is agriculture. You know, we have such a rich history. Sure. You obviously, your background also is in sort of agriculture there. What are you hearing from farmers about some issues they're facing? And what would be some of your priorities in federal agriculture policy or the next farm bill?
Sure. Well, again, I mean, everywhere we look, right? Every home budget, every agricultural budget is being squeezed to the max when we look at utility, you know, energy costs, right? In the case of farmers, I mean, we're talking fuel prices. We're talking fertilizer. My son and daughter-in-law, you know, are on a dairy farm in Columbia County. And, you know, they were talking to me the other day and they said, you know, Pop, you know, the fertilizer costs are just so extremely high this year. So these are input costs that unfortunately our farmers are not always able to realize out of the product that they're putting into. So one of my key motivators and one of the key objectives getting into Washington would be to be on the Agriculture Committee, but also to understand that there are some key input costs, i.e., you know, fertilizer, fuel, utilities, energy, things of that nature. And to see if there was a way that we can't mitigate or help relieve some of the stress on that side, helping them when they get ready to sell their crops, sell their milk, sell the finished product, if you will, to help take some of the sting out of it. And let's not forget, too, New York, we really didn't help out our agricultural warriors, as I call them, by instituting the wage bill that basically put farming on a 40-hour work week, which any of us know. I bet you the farmers really would love to say it is a 40-hour work week. It's not even close. And it was really very detrimental to them to be able to have to pay overtime and things of that nature. So we really haven't really taken on the approach of listening to what they're telling us. That's what I'll do. I will bring that to Washington in the best ways.
Yeah. And speaking on the topic of affordability, you know, gas prices, groceries, housing, sure. Yeah. Utility bills are putting pressure on families. What can Congress realistically do to lower the cost in the short term, at least?
Well, you know, one of the items that I actually have started on the state level, which I think could in essence carry over as well, is a ratepayer's bill of rights. And we all seen our just picking the utility part of the process, you know, exponentially, right? Our utility rates have gone up, and there's culpability on many, many fronts, you know, and I used to say in business when I was, you know, a CEO of a company I started, I used to say sometimes we always look to fix the blame. Well, if we fix the issue, then we don't have to worry about fixing the blame. And so the issue here is affordability. And so I started a ratepayer's bill of rights. And really what that does is it brings back accountability. It brings transparency and it brings power back to the people. A couple key points. There's like 8 key points of my legislation that I like to talk about. And it talks about, you know, not being able to have your services turned off in the event of inclement weather, you know, for lack of payment of a bill. Having to speak to a live representative, okay? Looking at transparency on what the billing is. There's many little codes on your bill, and it's a, you know, it could be $30 here, this cost here. And we really don't know what they pertain to. So we want a transparency when it comes to the actual billing. We want actual readings. We don't want any kind of estimated readings. In the event of a credit that is due, it needs to be immediately through an ACH brought back to the account, not applied to the next. So those are just some key points. And I'll leave you with this. This is the one entity. This is the one product that is metered, right? Because it goes through your electrical meter. How do I know that the meter is correctly formulated, correctly adjusted? You know, coming from the food industry, right? We have weights and measures. They check our scales to make sure a pound is a pound and so on. You go to the gas station, you dispense a gallon. Those are checked to make sure that you're getting a gallon. Well, why aren't those electric meters looked at by an outside entity to gauge that if I'm getting a a kilowatt or whatever, you know, is being drawn on, that I'm actually getting it. So that's some things that we'd like to bring up and actually start to address. And I think I can address those when I get to Washington as well.
Yeah. And that's and that same subject, another issue that we have here, you mentioned, is healthcare. Rural healthcare is a major concern in the district. You know, just here alone, like I say, in Sullivan County, we have one of the major hospitals is sort of closing down two different clinics there. And now, you know, forcing patients to sort of travel further. So what role should Congress play in sort of strengthening rural healthcare?
Well, first and foremost, they need to address the fact that there is a difference between urban and rural, and the rural healthcare is so much, you know, more challenged. We're challenged by transportation. I mean, our you know, elderly are trying to get out and travel. Number one, if you don't have a personal vehicle, there's really no other method of transportation. There are, but there aren't, if you know what I'm saying. And they really don't address transportation. They don't address the distances involved, right, with having to travel up here. And they don't address the weather. I mean, let's be honest, right? I mean, February and March can be challenging at any time of the year. So first and foremost, you know, Washington really needs to understand there is a difference between an urban and rural setting. Our choices here in the rural settings are limited, so we need to increase those. We need to potentially look at where can we draw in the talent. That's the other part of it, right? We're talking doctors, nurses, you know, healthcare professionals of all types. What can we do to increase and make coming to a rural setting that much more attractive? We can do that also by looking at potentially, you know, taking care of student loans, right? I think that would be a huge thing. I think we can also look at just making sure that those options become more frequent and more available. So, and again, I have to educate Washington on those challenges.
And one of the challenges, another challenges that we're facing here, I know there are, like, say, Sullivan County at least, is making efforts to sort of broaden connectivity. Broadband is still an issue in a lot of places, and we saw that come to the forefront during the pandemic. What should the federal government do to make sure, like, small towns and farms and businesses have reliable internet to do business or to do personal stuff?
So I was a former ranker on the Internet and Technologies Committee in Albany, and this will frame it up perfectly. I couldn't get broadband at my house. So the challenges are real, you know, that last mile connect that everyone talks about, but I wish it wasn't as entangled as it is, because a lot of times we're talking about DOT right of ways to allow for those trunk lines to be basically implanted, right, and put in. You know, we're looking at utilities that have their poles and the availability to hang on those poles and those type of things. So, you know, when you really start to look at it, I say we really need to get serious about it. We need to get serious about it. We were able to electrify all the ruralness of New York and of the United States. The same mindset really needs to apply to this. Now, the only other thing is, I can say this because I didn't have that option. I went with a satellite system. I am not an investor. I don't care about it. But I mean, the Starlink system that I have, and I am not a techie. I turned it on, and it works, and it's able to allow us to have this meeting. So, you know, maybe there could be a way of a coupon or some sort of a system that would help purchase the initial equipment, which from the time I've purchased it till now has really gone down, to allow that last mile connect to happen in one way, shape, or form. Because again, we're talking telemedicine, right? We're talking to be able to be connected on so many different levels, and let's, you know, trying to do an appointment anymore. I mean, you have to go up online to do it. So the time has come. We need to get serious. We can do this if we put our mind to it.
Now, New York 19 is I think, politically competitive. You know, we have Democrats, Republicans, independents, rural voters, college communities, and all these small businesses, owners, all in the same district here. How would you represent people who might not agree with you politically, but still you represent them?
You know, first and foremost, you got to listen, and you got to listen to learn and not to respond, as I've said previously. 73% of my Senate district is in the New York 19th. So people have seen me for the last 6 years. They know what I'm about, who I'm about, the issues that I've been able to address. And so, so long as we're conversing, so long as we're able to talk respectfully, that's the beginnings of anything. And, you know, there was a great quote by Ronald Reagan, who I just absolutely so enjoy. And he said at one time, he says, listen, if we agree 80% of the time, I'm not a 20% enemy. And I think we've got to kind of get back to that. We got to get back to, yeah, there'll be disagreements. If you focus on where you disagree, there's no room to move. If we focus on where we do agree and then work slowly towards it, I think you'll start to see those changes. And the last part I'd like to bring in is I've made this work in Albany. I've worked across the aisle. I have was the second largest Republican senator to get bills passed in the Senate. That is from the majority, of course, is a Democratic majority. So you have to learn, you know, you have to be able to converse and to find that commonality and that common ground. And I believe I can do that. And that's what I will bring to the 19th is definitely someone who will listen to learn.
Yeah. Now you have received the endorsement of President Donald Trump. What does that endorsement mean in this race, and how closely you think you will align yourself with his agenda once you're in Congress?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, listen, I'm a Republican. He's mine and our president. So to get his endorsement, of course, I was very honored, you know. But I also think it focuses in on a couple of things. I mean, being a businessman, a former CEO of a company, you know, a food scientist, right, by profession and a research chef, I think it also acknowledges that there is a skill set that I will bring to representing the New York 19th. Now, also, you know, we just talked about being able to agree and disagree and things like that. When we agree, perfect. Everything, you know, we'll move forward in that way. And when we don't agree, it's my job to bring back to Washington what is best for my district, find a suitable way of addressing that issue, and then moving forward with a plan to implement it and to make it better. So, listen, I'm ready to go to Washington. I'm ready to work hard. I'm ready to make things happen here in the New York 19.
Well, before that happens, we have a June 23rd primary that's going to happen only a couple of days away. You know, by the time this airs, the early voting will be underway by then. So, you know, why should voters, when they come to the poll, when the Republicans come to the primary to vote, why should they vote for you over your opponent?
It really comes down to, I think, just experience and maybe a maturity that comes with that experience. You know, again, having come up through the ranks from, you know, being a town board member, county legislator, town supervisor, and state legislator, you bring with you then a skill set, right? And again, I want to say a maturity level that I think apply to the process. So, listen. You know, if the voters are number one, we want them to come out. I mean, that's going to be the main thing, right? We need to get the voters out. And I think once they really look at what I'm able to bring, the skill set I'm able to bring, my past performances and things of that nature, I think it becomes very clear that this is who you would want to lead and to administer, if you will, to the New York 19th.
Well, say, Senator Peter Rucker, before we leave, is there anything else I have not touched on you want voters to know about or anything like that? Or,
This is the part I love. The fact that Number one, I was able to marry my high school sweetheart. We're celebrating 40 years this year.
Congratulations.
And thank you. And I always like to say she's such a lucky a woman. I've only spent 39 years trying to convince her of that point. I'm a father, you know, to two grown children. And again, pop to five of the greatest gifts that God can give you. And I think that's what really grounds me. That's the common ground that I think you really need by coming from this district. It's those shared values. It's those family values. It's those values that are born out of hard work and understanding. That's what I bring to this position, and that's what I will bring to Washington when I get there.
Well, thank you for that. We're talking to State Senator Peter Oberacker, who's running for the Republican primary for New York's 19th Congressional District. The primary is happening on June 23rd, and the winner of that primary is expected to face Democratic Congressman Josh Riley in November. State Senator Peter Oberacker, thank you so much for this. I do really appreciate it.
Oh, I do as well. Thank you, and have a great day.
That's Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio talking with State Senator Peter Oberacker, who's seeking the Republican nomination for New York's 19th Congressional District. Tomorrow we'll hear from his opponent in the Republican primary, political newcomer and entrepreneur Alexander Pertelli. You can watch this interview that you just heard, along with all of our election coverage and candidate conversations, on Radio Catskills election page at WJFFradio.org and on our YouTube channel. Please go there and subscribe at YouTube.com.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. The Skinner's Falls Bridge may be gone, but the conversation over its history and legacy continues. To determine what happens next at the site, PennDOT's holding a meeting, its third on this topic, happening Wednesday evening at Tustin Town Hall in Narrowsburg. For more Radio Catskills, Patricio Rubio spoke with Heather Gerling, cultural resource professional and architectural historian with PennDOT.
The purpose of the meeting for Wednesday is to go over the draft MOA, Memorandum of Agreement document, that we have drafted as part of the Section 106 project for the Skinner's Falls Bridge removal.
Okay, since the bridge has been removed, what decisions are still open or unresolved still?
As far as cultural resources, I'll say that for the project, the only thing we have left to resolve is polishing up this MOA document. The mitigation commitments have already been picked out, and those are the stipulations that you can see in the draft document that we sent out to everyone. So we're just meeting to refine those and get any sort of comments, feedback that can help us as we move through the actual process of completing those proposed mitigation commitments.
The idea of a future replacement bridge, is that even still in the picture, or has that ship sailed?
It is not in the picture as far as the Section 106 process for the bridge removal project is concerned. We're focusing on wrapping up the cultural process for this particular emergency project Wednesday night, so we can move on from the emergency removal and hopefully focus in the future on any projects that may take place at that location. The Pell study document was released in May, and that came to the determination that we still need a pretty good amount of funding to be found in order to put a bridge back at that crossing.
Now, for those who missed the first two meetings, can you go over some of the things that were mentioned or some of the processes that are being considered?
So during the first two meetings, we asked for ideas for potential mitigation, and we got quite a few. Some of them were HAIR documentation, which is the Historic American Engineering Record, to be done on the bridge before it was torn down, which we did do. That has already been completed. We had requests for a monument. We had requests for something being done with the PA abutment that was out there. We had a grant program request. We had local art projects requested. We had requests for things be done with the pieces of the bridge that we set aside after the bridge was removed. Really quite a few. The ones that we have narrowed it down to was the HAIR documentation, like I said. The monument is being taken through. There's a lot of to be determined on that, but it's something that I will work with consulting parties to flesh out and figure out where that is going and what that will look like. One of the others was the grant program. The Upper Delaware Council will be in charge of managing that funding for the local area. And then we're also, PennDOT is reviewing its existing historic trust bridge management plan as part of the MOA document as well.
So when you say, I'm just curious about the monument, when you say a monument, are we talking about like a plaque or like a statue or something like that? Or
possibly all of the above. It's one of the things that the consulting parties and organizations still have to decide. A plaque will be involved for sure, because we need to have that historic information available to the public with whatever is decided to go out on the landscape. But as far as what it looks like and what it's going to consist of, that is still up for review and input by the consulting parties.
And this has happened because the Skinner's Fault Bridge was a historic bridge. And so this mitigation helps ease that loss of to the area, right?
Correct. Okay. The Section 106 regulations that we have in the U.S., if we remove a National Register listed historic resource from the landscape, we have to do mitigation to set off the balance for that adverse effect we had.
How can folks be part of this? I know it's in person, but how can folks get into if they want to join the meeting virtually?
So if they want to join the meeting virtually, there was a Zoom link that went up with the path posting with the invite. And I know that invite has been circulated in the area. Since it's a web link, it's a little hard to say verbally. So that is out there. They can also come to the Tustin Town Hall if they would like to join us in person. They can also, if they have ideas for the specific mitigation commitments we've already listed and would like to perhaps put forward the name of a local artist who could work on the monument or stuff like that, they can also just contact me directly through my PennDOT email address, which is just my name, hgerling@pa.gov. They can do that as well.
Now, and we'll make sure to include the link on our website for this article there. Heather, do you have any kind of like rough outline, timeline-wise, post this meeting where things... where folks that should be maybe keeping an eye on or who are interested in this part of the whole process as to whether what mitigation is going forward?
So after this meeting, we will hopefully circulate this draft MOA for signatures by both PennDOT and NYSDOT and the National Park Service and both state historic preservation offices. Once everyone who needs to sign it has signed it, it'll go up to the PATH website again. And I will send it out to the consulting parties like I have the previous meeting invitations. Once it's signed, we can actually start working on the actual mitigation commitments, which I'm very excited about. And I will continue as we get those up and going to send updates through the PATH website. That's where PennDOT does all of our cultural communication, through that website.
Let me ask you this, Heather. A year from now or 5 years from now, what do you hope the public will say that was accomplished through this process or when they come visit the former Skinner's Falls Bridge site?
I'm hoping in the next 5 years or so that we, especially with the grant program, have really been able to dig into some of the historic and cultural backgrounds of that area and really produced some good materials and exhibits and things of that nature that the public has access to and that they can maybe learn a little bit more about the surrounding area from. I'm also hoping that the monument that gets built gives the community a chance to come together and create something that they can say they had their hand in and that they can be proud of. I'm really hoping we can find a local artist from that area that can help design and build the monument as well. That's one of my goals for that particular piece of mitigation. My overall goal is to really have the local community heavily involved with creating each of these mitigation commitments to the extent that it's possible. I want it to be done by the local community for the local community.
Heather, thank you so much for this. The third Section 106 consulting party is for the Skinner's Falls Bridge project is scheduled for Wednesday, June 17th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at the Tustin Town Hall in Narrowsburg, with also a virtual option available through PennDOT. The meeting will focus on the draft memorandum of agreement and proposed mitigation measures following the removal of the historic Skinner's Falls Bridge. So Heather and Lisa, thank you so much for this. I do really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Big thanks to Patrizio Rabaio for tonight's interviews, and thank you for being here with us. I'm Jason Dole, and this has been the Local Edition. We'll be back again tomorrow evening to do it all over again. Stay with us for more news coming up next on The Daily. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.